the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Here's your host, Jim Poplava.
A lot of Americans are getting additional citizenships and additional passports. Why would you want to do that? Well, that's going to be the subject of today's show. Joining me on the program is Christopher Willis from Latitude, and their website is latitudeworld.com. What are some of the reasons that Americans are applying for second citizenship? I guess that's one question. And a follow-up question to that, why would I want a second citizenship?
Hi, Jim. Thanks so much for having us. And it's a great question. And it's not something that Americans have usually had to consider. You know, being able to travel on a U.S. passport was usually not a problem. But what we've seen now, you know, in the last 6 months or so, as a result of predominantly of COVID, many borders have closed, you know, to American citizens. So they're unable to travel to certain places like Canada, you know, like Europe, Asia, for example. So the sort of power of the almighty U.S. passport has definitely rescinded. And so when people are looking to travel, they've got to say, well, how can I get into country X if they're not accepting American citizens? So that's an immediate benefit, you know, and granted, it's responsive to the current pandemic. But it also acts as an insurance policy or a different type of insurance policy for many people, because they may say, look, I'd rather go to a different country and sort of hunker down there while the pandemic's going on in the U.S. so I can protect myself and my family. And as long as I know that, you know, I can have access to good communications, I can manage my business, my kids can learn online, but I know that I'm in a safe and secure environment. You know, as an example, in the Caribbean, many of them actually shut their borders, you know, and are only just reopening them now. So nobody was going in or coming out. So that was a way to be able to contain it because they could seal their borders. So it's, and ultimately it comes down to everybody's personal needs. But we're actually seeing a lot more now of people who are concerned about the civil unrest that's happening in the U.S. as well. You know, we're seeing people are worried, you know, if their kids are out in the evening, you know, what's going to happen? You know, and it's creating an uneasiness that people say, look, I just want to make sure I've got a plan B. Because everything that's been going on in the last 6 months has been a major reality check, you know, in the United States. And, you know, people who were thinking, oh, I better prepare for that what if, but the what if is actually right now. And so people are now looking at this as a second option.
One issue that goes along with that is this new digital world that we're living in. One of the things that we're finding with COVID is, you know, for example, in our own business, we've been working remotely since March. So certainly, as long as you have access to the internet, you can conduct your business or your affairs anywhere around the world. Let me ask you this. When you get a second citizenship, you know, governments make money by taxing the economy and taxing their citizens. So if I become, let's say I get a second citizenship in another country, do they tax my income?
Depends on the jurisdiction. You know, some country, I mean, obviously as an American, you know, you're subject to tax on your worldwide income, you know, which is, I guess you're one of the unique situation that Americans have. But in terms of the general tax principles, it's based on your country of residence in terms of where you're going to be taxed. So even if you're a citizen of country X, if you're not spending 183 days or whatever the trigger number is to make yourself a tax resident, then it wouldn't come into play. As a matter of fact, many of the countries that offer a citizenship by investment, in particular in the Caribbean, are zero tax jurisdictions. So there's benefits, you know, either way, depending how you want to structure it. People tend not to look at this as a tax play because as Americans, you know, you do have to, you're subject to your worldwide income. But depending on some jurisdictions, it might be, there may be ways to minimize it. I'm not a tax guy, just full disclosure, but I'm an immigration guy, but certainly it comes part of the conversation. But first and foremost, what we're doing is promoting or enhancing the freedoms of Americans here, because you know, their global freedoms have been impacted. And so these programs provide a way to enhance it.
Yeah, I think you made a comment that up until recently, Americans could travel to 171 countries, and it's down to just 86 now. So I suppose if you want to travel, or more importantly, you have to do business in these countries, that could create a problem.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's two ways of looking at it. I mean, if you were, let's say you wanted to go to the Cayman Islands and you wanted to spend 6 months there in your villa on the beach, the only way they're going to let you in is if you have status, right? So if you can't just turn up as a visitor and expect to be granted access, if you don't have proper status, they're not going to let you in. Same with other Caribbean countries that have the citizenship program. By virtue of your citizenship, they will grant you access into the country. But if you don't have it, then they'll turn you around because of all these travel bans that are in place. And that extends into Europe as well. So let's say you got economic citizenship in St. Lucia, for example, and you wanted to go to Europe. You say, well, okay, I'm going to enter Europe on my St. Lucia passport because there's no travel ban like there is for Americans. You know, and again, depending on each country's requirements, you're going to have to quarantine and go through those initial processes. But the point being, you can actually get entry into that country by virtue of that second citizenship.
As you mentioned, one of the things that's unique about the U.S. is they tax your worldwide income. So even if you're not living in the U.S., you could be living, I don't know, in England or in Japan, you're still paying U.S. taxes. So let's take a situation where an individual gets a second citizenship. I don't know, it could be anywhere. And they decide they want to live there. Doesn't the U.S. have, well, first of all, they're still going to pay taxes, even though they're living in another country. But let's say they want to make that their domicile and they wanted to give up their citizenship. Wouldn't they have to pay a big tax penalty? Or I believe the U.S. taxes you when you exit.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, there's for people who want to renounce, it's quite a low number. You know, it's certainly less than 10,000 people a year, which is only a small percentage of the overall population. Because there's two things. One, if you're going to renounce, you need to have a second citizenship. You can't make yourself stateless. But secondly, you know, you want to make sure you have something comparable, right? So do you want a Caribbean one or do you want something comparable, which is maybe a European citizenship? But it's a big decision. You know, Americans are very patriotic, and even though they may say, "Oh, you know, I'm gonna renounce," those who actually do it and go through the process, it's very involved. And yes, there's gonna be, and you have to get proper counsel because there will be a tax bill at the end of it. So it's quite a complicated process. As I said, it's less than 10,000 people a year who would do it, but it's you know, we're seeing it's certainly an upward trend anyway. But I don't see it being of enormous scale in the next few years.
Are there any particular countries that are more popular for citizenship? I guess a follow-up, if there are, why?
Well, certainly from the Americans, the Caribbean is very popular. Now, if we look at the industry as a whole, globally, you know, there's, you know, the European and the Caribbean are the most popular ones. But if we look purely at geography, you know, it's very, many Americans have been on a cruise into the Caribbean or they've had a vacation there. So there's a sense of familiarity. And plus, you know, it's a couple of hours from Miami and you're there in the Eastern Caribbean. So it's not a huge commitment in terms of time. And they're the most cost effective. I mean, in terms of the programs, the investments or the financial outlay would start at 100,000 US. So it's not that cost prohibitive to many people. The European options, on the other hand, if you're looking at citizenship, you know, that'll take you into the millions. You know, you're looking somewhere like Malta, about 1.5 million US, and places like Cyprus, you're looking about 2.5 million euro. So it comes down to a degree of, you know, you get what you pay for. You know, if you're looking at the value of a European passport versus a Caribbean one, you're going to pay more for it. And Cyprus is more expensive because it is processed much faster. You're looking about 6 months as opposed to 18 months, which what it would take in Malta. So there's, like with anything, we have to really sit down with a client and fully understand what their motivations are. And then we can best guide them in terms of which program will be most suitable. And again, this is based on their time scales, the cost, you know, what their motivations are in terms of access. Because the flip side of this, Jim, is that there's also residence by investment programs, you know, which we see in places like Portugal, we see in Ireland, we see in the Cayman Islands. So these don't actually give immediate citizenship. And, you know, by being a citizen, you have the privilege of getting a passport. This just gives you residency status. So you can go and spend as many days per year as you like, and that they will all also have a graduation program to citizenship. So in Portugal, for example, you've got to spend 7 days a year for 5 years, you know, get a decent command of the language, and then you can apply to be naturalized and become a citizen of Portugal. And by being a citizen of Portugal, you're also a citizen of the European Union. So if someone's not in a rush and they want access to the EU, this is an interesting option. And it's essentially a real estate purchase as well. So it's not a pure donation like you see in other programs. It's an actual, you're investing into an asset. So it's a good long-term plan. And then we're seeing the same in Ireland. There's a lot of Americans who have an affinity to Ireland, and so they want to, you know, establish that connection as well.
Is there any advantage if your parents were foreign-born? Like in my case, my parents were born in Europe. Is there any advantage, or is it easier for somebody who had parents born in another country?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, some each country will have its own requirements as it relates to what we call citizenship by descent. So usually it goes at least one generation. In some countries, it can be two. So yes, if there's a claim to citizenship through descent, then that's something worth exploring in the first go around, because obviously it's a much more straightforward process.
What are the benefits of doing this? In other words, why would I want a second citizenship? What would be the benefits to me?
Well, we spoke a little bit about the mobility, but you know, this even before COVID, what a lot of Americans were looking at, there's a few things. One, you know, if you're a, you know, a business person and you travel frequently, maybe you're going to some parts of the world where Americans are not that welcome, right? So you say, look, I'd rather check into a hotel, you know, on my Antiguan passport than as an American, right? You never know if someone behind the desk is selling lists saying, hey, there's an American in room 12, you know, and that type of thing. So for high profile people, there's some benefit there to stay a little bit under the radar. We also see people, you know, maybe more in the north, you know, Boston, New York, who, you know, come February, it's cold in winter and they want to go down to the Caribbean. They say, well, why don't we buy a villa for lifestyle purposes, but then we can double up and use that purchase to qualify for economic citizenship. You know, so there's different things like that. And even to a greater extreme, dealing with firms that that provide kidnap insurance, they're saying, well, look, again, if you're flying under the radar and traveling on a Caribbean passport, you're less likely to trigger any interest than if you were traveling as an American. So as I was saying earlier, it really boils down to individual needs and the profile of the client to see which one would be best suited. And then we spoke about the mobility, as we mentioned. The other thing I think a lot of people are looking at now, and in the United States, as we know, the pandemic has really hit hard to a lot of people. And so when they're looking at another country, one of the questions they look at now is how well did that country manage COVID? Because they're saying, if something like this should flare up again, am I going to be safe? Is it going to be well managed? Is my family going to be able to spend time there and be able to continue with our lives? So it's not a black and white answer where it's, you know, why should I do it? There's a lot of layers on it, again, depending on the profile of the applicant.
What does it cost to do this?
Well, as I touched on earlier, there's two ways that it typically works. Either you make a donation or a contribution to the government, which is a non-refundable, you know, cash donation, or you purchase eligible real estate that's been pre-approved by the government, or in some cases it's a combination of the two. So the most cost-effective way in places like St. Lucia and Dominica in the Caribbean, the donation starts at 100,000 US for a single person. And then, you know, you have to add on, you know, professional fees, due diligence fees, passport fees, etc. But you're still going to be south of 150. And then the fees would go up proportionally depending on the size of your family. And also some programs, you know, will there'll be small variations in their amount, in the amount that's required. But on the flip side, like we spoke about the Caribbean, in Europe, as I mentioned, Cyprus is 2.5 million euro, you know, which you're investing essentially into real estate. Somewhere else in Europe, like Portugal, which is a residence program as opposed to citizenship, you know, you may be going in at 350,000 euro, but it's a 5-6 year journey till you're eligible for citizenship. So again, it depends on how much you want to spend, how quickly do you need to get citizenship, you know, where do you like to spend your time? Because for many of these programs, you know, you're going to want to spend a bit of time, you know, in this new jurisdiction.
Maybe a question that comes to mind is, if all I'm going to do is just, let's say, own a place on an island, I'm going to vacation there. If I'm a New Yorker, maybe I'm going to go there for the winter months. Outside of that, why would I need to get a citizenship? In other words, why not just buy a piece of property, go down there and forget all the legal ramifications of becoming a citizen and filing and all those things?
You're absolutely right. You could just buy it for lifestyle and that's it. But let's say you wanted to spend time there, you know, during something like this pandemic. If you don't have the right status, so you couldn't enter as a visitor, the only way the country will give you access will be as a citizen. So it's giving you that insurance policy. You know, in fact, we're seeing more and more people in the U.S. talk to us about their concerns about the civil unrest that I touched on earlier. So they're saying, look, if things really get bad, I need to know I can get my family on a plane. I can go to this part of the world where things are safe and they're going to be protected. And I know I'll be granted access because I have the correct status. So if you don't do that, then if you just had your place there, but you were coming in as a visitor, they would deny you entry. So it's again, almost a different type of insurance policy. Because so then it's in your back pocket. You've got it if you need it, right? And, you know, we're even seeing some people are looking at second citizenships as more of a status symbol. You know, instead of, you know, comparing watches or comparing cars, people are comparing passports, you know, and saying, well, what have you got? And, you know, how did you get it? You know, so it's becoming a little bit more into that psyche that people are looking this as a at this as a necessity. Again, it's the whole better to have it and not need it than to need it and not have it. You know, and as I said earlier, this current situation we've been in for the last 6 months has been a major wake-up call and a reality check for a lot of people who weren't prepared. And, you know, they're nervous and they're scared and they're essentially stuck in the U.S. because they can't get anywhere. You know, and so that mobility and that freedom that you're so used to has been impacted greatly. I mean, you look at the Canada-U.S. border, which is one of the most fluid in the world, if not the most fluid, you know, has stopped, has closed, you know, and it's been like that for 6-7 months, which is almost unheard of. So, you know, and the same with the EU. So until, you know, things are really kept under control or there's a vaccine or, you know, whatever the threshold will be, you know, Americans are still going to be restricted to remaining in the United States.
If our listeners would like to find out more about the process of getting a second citizenship or even maybe a second passport, how could they find out more about your firm and the services you provide?
Our website's latitudeworld.com, and my email is christopher.willis@latitudeworld.com. You know, please reach out and we'd be happy to have a conversation.
Thanks for joining us on the program and informing us of maybe some of the alternatives we should be looking at.
Thank you, Jim.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.